Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Are you tired of using Google Drive or Dropbox to send files to clients? Well, never get burned again with FilePass. I love and use FilePass exclusively for sending files to my clients. It's a cloud file sharing website specifically made by engineers for engineers. It's absolutely amazing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/FilePass to check out the full feature list and subscribe today. Never lose another dime to burned projects. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Two-Legged Lou.
I mean, he's not wrong, but...
Two legs. You got two legs.
I'm really glad you didn't go three-legged.
Three-legged Lou.
I'm not blessed like that, unfortunately. Shout out to all of you that are.
All right. Well, crazy. All right. Let's get into this episode. This is a pretty important topic, but we're going to talk about some ways that Lou and I do vocal pitch correction. Now, pitch correction is really important, and I think it's important to declare disclosure here that the podcast is, and Lou and I are both sponsored by Auto-Tune and Terrace.
Yep.
And we're going to talk a lot about that. There are other options, but actually, specifically, we think that Auto-Tune is objectively the best.
Yeah.
But that's also based on like history, and it's been around the longest since the sound that most people are used to. It's the algorithm that most people kind of can tell, right?
And yeah.
That being said, there's a lot of other options out there. And we're going to talk a little bit about how we use Auto-Tune or how we use Melodyne even, or even other tuning softwares in relation to as far as like workflow goes, as far as expectation with clients and things of that nature. So How does that sound, Lou?
I think that's a good idea.
So we're going to get into this episode and let's start with the recording process, the very, very beginning of vocal tuning. Lou, we both have done a lot of vocal recording, and what is your personal process for getting good takes? Is it difficult for you to tell the artist to redo that take again if they're out of tune?
Not really. I've gotten used to the idea of like working with artists that honestly are good singers, and they want you to tell them, you know, like, that was a bad take. But they don't want to hear.
When they're good singers, they want
to
hear.
Yeah, they want you to say like, hey, let's get that one again. It was just a little sharp. It's like, okay, you know. And then there's singers that like they hear that like, oh, okay, yeah, let me try, because like some artists just have a harder time being in tune naturally. Maybe they're newer. Maybe they just are singing in a range that's not fully their own, you know. And I think that's kind of a big part of understanding whether you're using the right style tuning. Understanding one's vocal range. You know, some people can actually sing like, I don't know, I'm not a music theory guy, but let's just say C3, you know, if you can go that high, great. If you can't and you're pushing it, you might need a little more tune to kind of keep you centered. So like understanding the record and the vocalist, it will let you know how much tuning you need and their genre style. You know, if you're doing Tory Lanez, then it's set that bitch to zero. You know, but if you're doing somebody like everybody knows, like whenever I'm working with like Keisha, she would rather you turn it off, because sometimes the scale is what's messing you up, you know. And once again, knowing the record and the singer, Keisha likes to do like incidental notation, like in jazz, where like you find the note that's outside of the scale, but still within the scale technically. And if the Auto-Tune doesn't have the ability to do that, or you don't know how to like do custom scales.
Accidentals. Sorry.
Yeah, accidentals. Not incidentals. You infidel. No. Infidentals.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Keep going.
But honestly speaking, like, it's one of those where, like, if you know the artist style, it's a little bit easier to kind of just communicate, like, hey, that was just a little bit off, without it being like, oh, it's just the wrong style of tuning.
Yeah, for sure. And you're talking about, like, also auto-tune while recording as well.
Yeah.
Which we've heard Tizio talk about how he uses an aux track to commit mm-hmm. his auto-tune with Chris Brown.
Yep.
When he tracks with Chris Brown, although he's probably a little bit too busy to be tracking with him all the time now.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just, I think it's super duper important. I think that most artists are actually paying for your expertise, and I feel like the artists are often paying for your expertise and wanting to know when you think the song wasn't the best that it could be.
Yeah.
So it's like they want to know, hey, you could do that better.
Yeah.
And it takes a little bit of knowing the artist and knowing their skill, but it also takes a lot of patience. I have one client where he is not the best singer, but he can stay on pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it takes 10 to 20 times per line, we will take it there. And then at the end, we're gonna figure out a way to make it sound good. And if there's some part of a line that's like, we've done 10 takes and he's just not getting that one note, it's slightly out of range, or if he gets that one right, then he gets another one wrong. If it's something like that, then I'll say, hey, let me try this. And we have a relationship where he allows me to edit it right in front of his face.
Yeah.
I feel like, hey, like, and I'll like go like graph mode on auto-tune, or I'll do like,
Melodyne or something
like just for that note. And then even do destructive, like on Pro Tools, I'll do like a permanent change rather than through a plugin or a temporary change. And that will be like, and he'll prove it, like, okay, that sounds good, let's move on.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll keep going from there. I think the recording stage is probably the most important part. Melodyne is super cool, but if you're wondering why, movies like the new Beauty and the Beast, or what's that carnival one?
Oh,
The Greatest Showman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The reason why the singing in those movies kind of suck is because of Melodyne. It's because of all of the tuning. It really rips the life force out of the vocals.
It makes it too perfect.
Yeah, it's truly imperfections that make music amazing. And
call it a character sucker. You took the character out of the vocalist.
Yeah, for real. And
yeah.
I think that's why you want to get the right take. It's not because you can't fix it afterwards. It's because, I mean, just watch Beauty and the Beast with Emma Watson singing. It's just like, it's genuinely like painful. Versus like if you listen to like any Michael Jackson record, it's or Stevie Wonder record, or like any of these other vocalists where they're slightly off, and that's what makes them so great.
Just any genre. Like, I grew up listening to rock, and in rock, like, autotune is just, I'm not saying completely frowned upon. It's very prominent nowadays, but it's more in like modern rock, like post-hardcore mixed with electronic.
Also,
things
like techno. When rock was the mainstream, it was like there was no autotune like that.
Yeah, it wasn't allowed. Like, and in fact, it was more
technological as well.
Yeah, it was very applause to just be off key. Like, as long as it was a good take. You know, you weren't supposed to be completely off key, but like,
have you seen that meme with Michael Jackson where they're singing "We Are the World"? And like, it was, there's like four different singers, and they're just like really off. And Michael's like, ugh.
Yeah. Well, what was the one? Was it Lionel Richie who was trying to get to sing the line, and Lionel kept singing it his own way, and Michael's like, "That was nice. That was nice, but like this." But see, like that's kind of like the important part, because like when it comes to vocal tuning in the recording process, it's almost like you also had to like look at the performance as a factor of whether the tuning is helping the performance or taking from the performance too. For instance, if you know they like their vocals more naturally, why would you tune them harder during the record process? I would, if anything, go drier on them, just so that you can try to get them to push closer and closer to the note. So when you inevitably have to get them to the note with, let's say, graph mode or Melodyne or whatever, at the very least, you're not going for these almost inhuman changes, you know? And I think that's kind of where like that relationship really needs to shine. where like, if you know, we all know an artist that just doesn't want auto-tune, but you know, for the sake of the mix or the production, it's going to have to go on there.
And yeah, and I think with good vocal takes,
yeah,
you can do very minimal tuning either automatically or manually with something like Melodyne.
And it'll be almost inaudible.
Yeah, yeah. You can't tell. The artist can't tell.
Yeah.
And that's where you want to be. But if the artist is just not there, especially when they have the potential to be there, like if they can't sing, then you're going to have to, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Right? But if they can sing and they're just like not to that high level, they're just slightly off, then you can get away with a little bit of tuning and it won't suck the life out of it. Melodyne is great when you're really close. Auto-tune won't even work unless you're really close.
Yeah.
Like if you're not close, auto-tune will not correct the pitch to the nearest note. The nearest note, you have to be near that note because it corrects to the nearest note. It doesn't correct to the right note. It corrects to the nearest note.
It literally almost works as if it was just broken down math. Like, hey, if it's in the 50 percentile, then we'll go this way. If it's in the 49, it's going this way.
Exactly. So that's why manual tuning is great, because if it's like a couple semitones off, then you can, or like a whole, like a couple whole notes off, you can move it. If it's an octave off, you can retune it. I mean, it'll feel really bad, and you can change the formants, and you can change like.
But you
a bunch
might
of
have like a Pink Panther vibe.
You know, whatever. But the problem is, or not the problem, but the beauty is that you can actually use these tools and keep what did you call it? The character,
yeah.
The life force of it. You can keep it, and I think far too often people are afraid of it. Now let's talk about the expectations of the industry. Now that being said, we want to be careful with this because it's pretty subjective here.
Yeah.
But that being said, if you are trying to sing a song and the point of your band and your sound is not to be a bad singer, if that's not like the entire point.
Yeah.
Right, I'm thinking of what's that band like Cake? Who they're like kind of like rapping, like
I
not
don't
rapping,
know, but I just love the name Cake.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh,
it's Cake.
Oh, wait.
Big skirt and a long short skirt and a long jacket. You know. So anyway, so that's like the point of their music. You know, you're not trying to tune that.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to be a singer.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why even Ariana Grande, who's arguably one of the best singers in the world at this current
hitting
moment.
Hitting whistle notes live.
Right? And, or Mariah Carey, right? Or if you're one of the best singers in the world currently, Ariana Grande still refuses to work without autotune.
Yeah.
So there's a sound, there's a tone, there's that level of expectation from the audience, from the listeners, whether you like it or not. If you're trying to be like a pop singer or a vocalist, you got to do some level of tuning. And I'm going to let you know right now that it's not embarrassing.
Yeah.
If Ariana Grande uses vocal tuning, then you, who probably sucks significantly more than her, are allowed to unashamedly use auto-tune or any sort of tuning. And the expectation is to do so. In fact, if you're trying to be a good singer and you're like too lazy to tune the vocals all the way, or if you're, more importantly, I think this is more the case, some people, like if you're unable to sing the right notes, you may not have the ear to tune your own notes.
Yeah.
Now, some people are able to tune their own notes, but unable to sing them, right? But most, I would say a lot of people that can't sing are not the pickiest when it comes to tuning their own voice.
Yeah.
So that may be a good time to hire an engineer or producer to just tune their vocals. And you know what? Hiring a producer and engineer to just tune your vocals can be very cheap.
Yeah, honestly, it's not expensive. Like I don't even think it ever surpasses any of my mixing rates or anything.
I'm thinking like it doesn't even have to take someone as high as level as us too,
no,
or
exactly.
higher. It takes literally.
But a lot of times if you find an upcoming artist who's a really good vocalist that knows how to use Melodyne and hire them, it's really cheap. You get the perspective of another creative versus another, like, I guess, technical creative.
It could be a musician. It doesn't even have to be an engineer.
Somebody with
producer.
Just a good ear.
Yeah. It's because you're not even affecting like tonality other than like the pitch of the note and maybe like. Yeah.
You do want to clean it up before, though, a little bit.
Well, either way, like the minimum effort of doing the work to tune vocals is so incredibly important. I think it can make or break the song.
Yeah.
I think that.
I think so too. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many artists where the production is on point. Even the mixing is on point. It's loud. It feels great.
But then the vocal is out of key.
Out of key, or like just like slight, like just literally 2% out of tune.
Yeah.
It's like they're in tune most of the time, but then it feels fucking lazy.
Yeah. I've had clients where they say, oh, I want the vocal a little bit louder. It doesn't feel loud enough. And I'm just kind of like, you know, I didn't tune the vocal because like I wasn't asked to or anything. But like if I turn this vocal up, it's going to be way too distracting. So then instead of making it that much louder, maybe 1 dB louder, but I'll tune the vocal because in my head as the mixing engineer, I'm like, there's a reason it wasn't too loud right now. So I'm going to go ahead and tune it. And then suddenly they're like, oh, this sounds even better. It's like, it might be the tuning that you heard.
This is coming from us. We do a lot of like pop music, right? Yeah. So, which is the singing in, then tuning is very, very important. I would also say that even for something like folk music,
even rap.
With trap and stuff, it's all just hard tuned, right? But I'm thinking like for like, or just regular like rap.
Regular
like
rap.
Yeah, that too. Even for something as natural as jazz or even folk music, I still think tuning is important, just not in the same style.
Yeah.
For example, in pop music, you want to be like centered, like really clean pitches. Mm-hmm. If you do a run in a folk song and one of the notes in the 7-note run is off, you got to fucking fix that sucker.
Yeah.
But that being said, most of the time, I mean, if that's the vibe, that's the vibe.
Yeah.
But I would say that
I get it.
If you can keep if you can fix that one note, and if all the other notes, if all the notes in a row, all 7 notes in a row are slightly flat, that's cool. You can keep it that way, but like fix that one note.
Yeah.
Or maybe you center it just a little bit, but you don't have to go all the way. You can keep it sounding super natural and keep it sounding super live and real and authentic without being distracting. Now, I do think that if it's distracting, and you should find someone like an objective third party is great. If you are singing, you should not be the one to determine this most of the time. Go find a producer, go find a friend, go find another member of your band or group or whatever.
Somebody you trust.
Yeah, and ask them like, how's the singing here? Is it distracting? If it's not distracting to a musician, then it's probably okay.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the level you should be thinking of. Like, because if it's out of tune, it becomes distracting. And what you're doing is giving an out for anybody that's listening to the music to not pay attention to the music. Like you got to let people give the song a chance, give people the chance to enjoy the lyrics. And there's a lot of really popular songs where the vocals are really off, but they're not so far off that it ruins the song.
Yeah.
And there is a difference there. So I can't think of a song that's so off that it ruins the vibe of the song completely. Mm-hmm. That's really popular, other than like meme songs, right?
Yeah.
But that's so typically speaking. Okay, in the mixing process, first off, I don't know about you, but I will, as a mixer, tuning is not part of the mixing process. Mm-hmm. That's usually the producer's job. That's usually the recording engineer's job. That's usually if they're like a vocal producer, whatever. That's not my job. It should be tuned before it gets to me.
Yeah.
But if it's not tuned good enough, I will tune it more just because I'm a vocalist myself. Yeah. And I want to give the best product. You know, mm-hmm. If my name's going to be on it, I want.
Yeah. You don't want it to sound like something you would not want to be associated with. At that point, are you really even putting your all into it?
Well, my pride's not that big. I mean, I'm servicing the client. So if the client wants it to be off, but I will use my technical skill that I have sometimes on occasion, if I deem that it's distracting, mm-hmm. to fix certain notes here and there. But that being said,
response to that, if it's distracting enough to you, but the client wants it that way,
then I'll be like, sure, whatever. I mean,
but is it something that you'd really push on your portfolio?
It doesn't matter because my portfolio is so damn big that people are not gonna find it anyway. All right. Doesn't matter.
All right.
But it's like a barber, dude. I heard Young Guru talking about this in an interview. We always use like the barber metaphor, analogy. But this is how Young Guru mentioned it. He's like, if you're the barber and the client that's sitting in the chair wants a crazy ass haircut that's stupid, you're going to be like, as the barber, you're going to be like, that's stupid. I think you're going to look ugly. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't do that. And then the client says, Yeah, but I still want to do it. Now, your job as the barber is to be like, okay, and do it anyway.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I see stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like,
as long as there's the communication of
too. Yeah. It is your job as the service provider to be like, as a professional, I don't think this is right. Kindly. Yeah. I think this, in my professional opinion, I think this sounds better, but I'm more than happy to try your way or whatever the wording is. Ask ChatGPT to say that nicely for you, whatever. but the point is, you give that chance, and if they still say yes, you got to listen to them.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know what? I hate to say this. I really hate to say this. But even when I think that the artist is wrong, most of the time, like I would say like 70 to 80% of the time, it either sounds fine anyway or better.
Yeah.
Like it's only that 10 to 20% of the time where like my way was objectively better.
Yeah. I like to give people the two before telling them what I want to do just so they can hear it before turning it down.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a big believer in like turning in two options. Like, hey,
this is a version where I tuned it really hard and this is a version where I didn't.
Exactly. Like, especially when I'm like mastering somebody's song, I'm like, hey, I felt like there was a lot of bass in the mix. Here's a version of the mix with like that taken down, but here's a master based around your mix. You know, just let me know whichever one you want. There's no extra fees or anything, but I thought I'd communicate that.
That is a fantastic way. We've talked about that in previous episodes as well. Like, if you do a mix that's way too creative or way too different from the original, then duplicate it and do one where it's a lot less different.
Yeah.
Just in case, and give them two options. You don't want to change their song too much. And I think that as a singer, if someone overtuned my vocals or like changed my song or my production too much,
or they changed the character of the vocal through that tuning,
if it made it sound robotic, I'd be a little bit upset for sure.
And
what people find robotic is fairly subjective, but
that
being said, if tuning vocals oftentimes is an effort based thing, the point is put in the effort, you lazy son of a gun. Put in the effort.
And
don't
honestly,
be lazy.
Don't be embarrassed when you're in front of somebody. I know that sounds cliche, but I think it was only like 2 years ago that I really started singing in front of somebody, and I suck. Like,
well,
I know, I actively know I suck. Like, autotune at zero is still sometimes not enough for me, and I know that, but if it's just to get the idea out and you're fervently against the use of autotune, just understand it may just be the idea. Just get the concepts out if that's all, and then really, now you have a reference track of where your notes should be.
Well, I mean, to be fair, if you're embarrassed or nervous in front of a microphone or in a studio or in front of an engineer, you're probably not experienced enough. Like, that's like, Lou, you're not a singer. That's why you're getting nervous. You know, like, if you're a singer and you're getting nervous, that means you need to, like, practice being in the studio more often. Like, that is a skill that people learn. Like, Keisha Cole is
a real professional singer.
It's great. She's a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's times when she's not.
Yeah.
But even then, there's absolutely no level of embarrassment. In the studio, we're getting this done. Even if I do like a horrible off take, we're just going to do it again. It's not a big deal.
If you tell most good singers, like Keisha, like even when she's not, you just tell her, hey, let's get that again. And she's like, okay, cool. Let's go.
There's no level of embarrassment.
Yeah,
level
there's no concern about like, zero. Oh, that's going to take me more time to do another take. There's no concern of like, oh, but my voice. It's like, no, like if it's not the take, it's not the take. I don't want the take that's not the take.
And this might be where like also setting expectations with an engineer. This is why oftentimes a lot of artists, including these upper echelon artists, have a personal engineer is because these producers and engineers that the artist works with, they're kind of synced on expectations and they like the way that like what Lou's level of acceptable is. And when Lou says, hey, let's do this again. And when he doesn't say, let's do this again. And like, there's like a level of expectation understanding that is acceptable. And communication is good. Now we've also heard stories where artists have been like, hey man, stop talking. You're just the engineer. You don't need to talk as much. You know,
and that's totally cool. Sometimes you're just hired to push buttons.
Yeah, and you just gotta make sure that you read the room right, you work with the artists, and you find the clients and work the way that they want. That's important. They are paying for the service. You are just the barber, and if they want a crazy ass haircut, you give them a crazy ass haircut.
Just remember to be considerate of unknown feelings, I guess you could say. If you just walk in the room and the first thing out your mouth, assuming that you have that relationship with somebody, is, wow, that take sucked. Do it again. You might have just psyched them out for the rest of the session.
Yeah, never say something like that.
Yeah, just be like, hey, that was actually really cool. You know, let's get another one for safety. Just, I just like whatever. That one was cool, you know. Like, I personally wouldn't lie.
I probably would just be like, yo, can we get that again real quick? Just yeah. Like, that's all. Like, no preference.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, can we get that again?
Yeah. No, I was watching a video on Instagram that Selena uploaded, a reel, about the song she released with Caden. And it starts off with like just a little bit of like chatter at the beginning. And one of the things I heard myself saying in it was, yo, that was actually really smooth, but let's get one more for safety. And you just hear Caden, yeah, all right, cool, let's do it.
Oh, that's at the beginning of the track?
Yeah, it's not at the track, but of the reel. It was like a compilation video of like them recording.
I was like, I don't remember hearing that.
Yeah, like Henry came out in the video too. I was like, holy shit, that's like a cast fold out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was just kind of funny hearing that, because I'm like, so that's what I sound like saying that.
There you go. And then, so now let's get into... I want to talk a little bit about how I personally tune vocals, and well, Lou, I'll have you talk about it as well. But typically when I'm tuning a vocal, when I'm in a vocal tuning session, vocal production session, and I get a mix and the vocals are off and they're paying me extra for the vocal tuning or whatever, right? That's a classic scenario.
Yeah.
I will put auto-tune on the first insert, and then now Pro Tools, with the updated Pro Tools, has... Melodyne built right into Pro Tools, so you can actually, it'll like automatically instantly analyze, Melodyne will instantly analyze the audio file, and it doesn't have to run through the plugin anymore. It'll automatically analyze it, and then you can start adjusting notes, and I will adjust the notes into the plugin. So I will into AutoTune. So I will adjust into AutoTune. If there's something that feels a little bit off, then I will bypass AutoTune. And I oftentimes, while I'm tuning, will bypass both to see what... Because if there's sometimes where like a note's so off that like I just don't know what the melody is supposed to be. So I'll bypass everything. It's like, okay, what does this artist sound like they're trying to do?
Yeah.
And then I'll do the closest note to what the artist was trying like.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, even after I tune everything with Melodyne, I'll put an auto-tune on the first insert. Very lightly. Like, we're talking like 30 to 50 retune speed plus with like 50 humanized. No flex tune. I hate flex tune. I hate the sound of flex tune. I don't like flex tune. And that's a personal choice. I don't like flex tune. But then we'll make sure that things are all centered and things sound good and there's no glitches and it sounds as natural as possible. But I use both always. How about you?
Typically, that's how I've been working. Everybody has a copy of my template, and it's in my PDF, how I like to use it, which is a really funny thing, because like that's what we're talking about right now. But I mentioned in the PDF, and in the video, now that I remember, I do have a video on it. But basically, I keep AutoTune as my second insert while recording at all times, just because before Pro Tools added the ARA compatibility, I always put Melodyne as my first insert, and it was always a post-session process for me. I never used Melodyne during a session. If they can't get it into auto-tune the right way, then it's not getting into the recording.
So it'd just be bypassed or whatever? Or it just wouldn't record?
No, it just wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
It just didn't exist. I wouldn't add it.
I mean, that's going to make sense. I'm trying to think like how you would use Melodyne real-time.
Nope, impossible.
Yeah, that's not possible.
Imagine like, yo, you know what? Let me get that take again. It's like, fuck, I got to delete it off the graph, and I got to go into Melodyne and delete it off of that.
Oh, that's the nice thing about the new ARA, where it's like the
once you delete it off the thing, it just takes it off Melodyne. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
thank God.
Fantastic.
I almost like married Pro Tools at that point. I was like, you finally did it. You finally did it.
With the new Melodyne integration with Pro Tools, it's like that is literally the best and fastest way to tune vocals.
And if you have like Melodyne Studio or whichever version you have, it actually upgrades to that version within it. So the cool thing is it's full featured.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
But with that said, you know, typically I'll track somebody with AutoTune in, and I have my whole like grouping system and all that. So like if I wanted to treat backings as a separate tune group and all that kind of stuff, like I can just make them all the same speed, and I'll try to hold the artist as best as I can to that. If I need to actually like commit something down, I'll just duplicate a track, make it empty, copy that one region down, Melodyne that one region, and then slap it back into place. Mm. But the times I've had to do that, I can count on a single hand. You know what I mean? Like, I try to never use Melodyne while recording. It's always a post-recording process, especially with Keisha. Like, it's kind of our common practice for us to where we just record, and if it's not to take, it's not to take. That's it. And then after the session is done, before I get to mixing, she always just like, all right, cool, do the Melodyne thing. All right, cool. And I'll just Melodyne all the songs we recorded for that day. I'll just send her a bounce to her phone, little MP3, and then be like, cool, how do you like it? She's like, oh, okay, sounds good. Then I'll get to mixing. Because to me, tuning vocals is before mixing at all times. Like, oh, yeah, you shouldn't have to do it in the mix, but like you said, like if you get hired for a mix, then it's like you obviously want it to shine. And I'm a big believer that your mix will sound better if you tune the vocals versus if you didn't. It's just the way we hear things. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I get sent a song where the vocals are so well mixed already that I'm like, there's really nothing for me to do outside of like correct a few notes. I'll send them back then. They're like, oh man, that sounds so much better. It's like, I didn't do anything.
Well, with the idea of vocal production and vocal recording, we want to take a quick break on this episode and talk to you about our sponsor, Tegler, T-E-G-E-L-E-R. If you go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/Tegler.
Our good friend, Tammy.
There you go. Then Tammy.
Tegler Audio Manufacturing. Tam.
Oh my gosh.
Tammy's my friend.
And then, anyway, so if you go there and you type in the code MMPOD, not only will you get 10% off any of their hardware units on their website, but you will also get 10% off of their new plugin. That's just new. Yeah. So, and it's a sweet reverb plugin that's, at this time of the recording, has not been released yet, actually. But it's an emulation of one of their reverb units. Tegler is a current sponsor of the show. They're fantastic. You've seen them a lot by recording, mixing, and mastering engineer. They're especially popular out in Europe. A lot of their stuff is tube-based, and they even have a vocal recording channel strip, tube-based, where it's got a preamp, tube preamp into a compressor, and they've even got stereo compressors, they've got VCA, they've got tube, Varimute type stuff, they got tube summing mixer, they got a tube fucking reverb, dude.
That's nice.
They're a really cool company, really. Great gear. And I have the Shorecraft machine by them. And dude, it's fantastic. Their equipment is some of the best in the world. And it's definitely worth looking into. And if you want 10% off, it's only through their website. You can't get 10% off through Sweetwater or any other company here. You can only get it off through their website directly when you buy it directly from the manufacturer. Again, the code is MMPOD. So anyway, going back to the idea with tuning here. Now, also, when we tune the vocals, which is right before we start mixing, that's pretty normal.
Yeah.
While I'm mixing, I'm not really caring for the tuning. I'll put an extra auto-tune on the backing vocal, potentially some doubles or like ad-libs or things in the background that matter less. Harmonies I put on tuning, and yeah, I'll go like hard too.
Yeah.
Because you can't really hear the glitches when they're like stacked underneath as much.
Yeah, but do it on like low octave harmonies, like, oh, you get brick-walled.
Yeah, like, yeah, there's something about it where you, harmonies in order to be tight have to be in tune.
Yeah.
If it's a bunch of unison notes, then it doesn't matter that much. Or if it's like a huge stack of like 20, 30 vocals, then it doesn't matter as much. But if there's like a lead vocal with like two harmonies, yeah, that's when tuning matters a lot.
Yeah.
When you have like 30, 40 vocals or a choir, it sounds worse if you tune everybody. So like, it's okay if people are out of tune, it kind of cancels each other out and kind of goes back in tune. But yeah, if there's very few vocals, like between 2 to 7, I don't know, whatever, arbitrary number, then it's going to be more obvious when specific notes are out of tune. So
yeah,
just be aware of that.
Yeah, honestly, when it comes to like backing vocals, aside from tuning, it's kind of like he said, like, oh, it's okay if they're a little bit out of tune. One of my favorite things that actually do just slightly put them out of tune is adding flanger to the actual bus. Like, if you have like a big old stack of vocals and you hear the flanger going off a little bit in the background, it's like, oh, they sit a little bit better, deeper into the mix. It's like that depth kind of effect. But technically, flanger is throwing it off key a little bit, you know? So it's one of those, like, you could tune it, but chances are, knowing me and what I like in the mixes and all that, it's probably going to go slightly out of tune anyways. Like, kind of a redundant move.
Yeah. So, I think the point of this episode is take the time to tune, take the time to pay attention to the vocals, take the time to get good vocal recordings, even especially if you're recording yourself. And be self-aware. And if you are unable to tune the vocals, and if you keep hearing other professionals saying that your vocals need to be tuned, you should probably hire someone out. And here's the thing. This is an offer I'll give to our listeners right now. Lou and I know tons of vocal producers that are willing to tune your vocals for a fairly affordable rate.
Oh, yeah.
Including a couple of our interns.
Oh, yeah.
So if you are needing a vocal tuning, vocal producer, vocal tuning producer, whatever they're called, vocal tuning engineer, sure. If you need something like that, DM us on Instagram or email us, DM us on Discord or type in the Discord chat. I will, Lou and I will personally link you up with one of our people that we can trust and you can handle. They'll invoice you. They can handle the payment on your behalf, or you can just take care of payment with them and send over the files to them and they will do a good job.
Yeah.
And we will make sure that we connect you with the right person to get that job done.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that some of y'all may need. But at the same time, like, I do think tuning vocals is a skill that people get better at over time. And I think that if you grew up singing, if you are a singer yourself, there's also a... You know, it's crazy. Is that even, again, like what you said earlier, is that even if you're not a singer, but you're just like a really good guitar player, keyboard player, there's oftentimes some of the best tuners as well, because they're not singers. So they're like,
and they're like, wow, that singing was off.
Yeah. So they're able to pay attention. So just be just try out a few people, whatever, find the right sound for you. And we'll make sure we can connect you to the right people as well, based on what you need. So that being said, I think that this is a good close to this episode. Is there anything else that you want to add or talk about with tuning?
I'll add this. Don't overthink it. When you're recording, don't overthink it. Know the difference between the take and the idea. That's it. Just as long as you know that, even if you're fervently against autotune, you can find a use for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's important, because like part of me is like, no, you should overthink it. But if you are well-versed, well-practiced, then you should immediately be able to recognize that's not the one, and then just do it again.
You know,
don't overthink it. Yeah, that's why it makes sense. Yeah.
In a perfect world, autotune doesn't do anything if you know how to sing right.
Yeah.
So just saying, you know, don't over, like you said, don't overthink it.
Or autotune only works if you know how to sing right.
Yeah. Sing. Most people that say, oh, I know how to sing into autotune are actually saying, I know how to sing just enough off to get it to do what I want, which is, that's kind of my territory. I can't sing on, so I know how to get it just close enough.
There you go. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but If you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.